This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is a special edition iFanboy podcast on Marvel's Daredevil Season 2.
Stuck on my own, run fast, retreating for a place to hide.
Safe. Hello, welcome to the Special Jedi Fanboy Podcast on Marvel's Daredevil Season 2. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hey, make sure you get it right.
And former iFanboy columnist and frequent podcast guest, Mike Romo.
Hello.
And we have reconvened to discuss Marvel's Daredevil Season 2.
Two months later.
Yeah. Jeez. Slipping, guys.
So this is, we got, me and Mike and Josh got together to discuss Season 1, and me and Ron and Mike and also Josh discussed Jessica Jones.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this is a sort of little Marvel's Netflix crew here. And
Jessica.
I thought we'd put that behind us.
No, it's always good.
Never forget. Hashtag Jessica.
Season 2 of the Daredevil series, which is part of Marvel's deal with Netflix to make those five series, include Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and then the Defenders. Who knows how long these will keep going on, but we're enjoying them as they happen. Spoiler warning, if you haven't watched any of the 13 hours we're about to discuss, pause the show and come back. You'll be happier for it. This season kicks off. At the end of Season 1, Daredevil finally emerged from Hell's Kitchen to defeat Wilson Fisk and assert himself as the protector of that neighborhood. And Season 2 kicks off sort of shortly after that, in which Nelson and Murdoch are enjoying the fruits of being the darlings of the neighborhood, getting lots of business. And suddenly, there's more trouble on the horizon. So that's where we...
Suddenly very, very specific Hell's Kitchen neighborhood. It sounds like this enclave in Manhattan. Like, it's when I lived there, it was just it was just this area. But now it's, I only take cases in Hell's Kitchen.
It is interesting in that regard, because I feel like Hell's Kitchen used to be that way.
Yeah.
And then as the city has evolved and grown, right, or whatever, just kind of that's faded away. And of course, it used to be that way in the 60s when the comic started, I think. Right.
Yes.
Maybe I've just grown up.
The 60s, that was the Westies. That was, I mean, the 60s, 70s, and 80s is pretty much the last death throes of the Hell's Kitchen as a cultural neighborhood, as an Irish Catholic, you know, right, neighborhood. That was, you know, in Frank Miller's head, it's always that time in Hell's Kitchen. But in the Marvel world, we used to joke that in that bubble, time has not progressed. It's no longer called Clinton and there aren't a lot of yuppies and yuppie restaurants there.
But well, I think it's safe. I won't comment on the restaurants, but I'm pretty sure the Clinton thing didn't stick. I have not heard Clinton there in a long time. Possibly. Anyway, that's another topic.
It just this came out. I mean, Daredevil's always all about Hell's Kitchen, right? But this came out to me in either the last or the second to last episode. It might have been the last one. It made me laugh pretty hard when Froggy was being interviewed by the lawyer from Jessica Jones.
Right. Yes.
And she says, we take the most high-profile clients in Hell's Kitchen. And I just was like, what does that mean? The guy who owns the warehouse? Because that's all there is in Hell's Kitchen.
It's funny that she said that because Jessica Jones didn't take place in Hell's Kitchen. In fact, a lot of
that was weird.
Yeah.
That was Midtown, it seemed.
It was a lot of Midtown, a lot of Lower East Side, a lot of West Village. Yeah. So.
Yeah. But now I feel like you can actually get like a University of Hell's Kitchen sweatshirt or something now, right? Because you can sort of have a Hell's Kitchen brand now because of this show, where it was just where I got off on that street and that happened to be, I guess, Hell's Kitchen. But anyway, this is not a geography lesson. This is just a podcast.
There's a lot more space. There's a lot more neighborhoods.
Yeah. It's a big city. A lot of stuff to do.
So the big news for this season is that we were introduced to the Punisher and Elektra, the Punisher, played by the veteran of The Walking Dead, Joe Bernthal. I'm sorry, John Bernthal.
John Bernthal.
And Elektra, I lost my page.
Elodie Young.
Elodie Young played Elektra. She was Jinx.
Oh, really?
In the G.I. Joe movies, yes.
I thought this was really interesting because his character... His acting style, he pretty much seems to do this one thing, and he really loves this one thing, and he just basically carried over a little bit what he did with Walking Dead and just turned it up a bit.
With a little less of a southern accent.
It's a tiny bit. But for me, like, where I was a little bit annoyed with him, to be honest with you, in Walking Dead, I thought he was just – he nailed it with this. I think – I felt like this was the role that was – he was really designed to play.
He's the standout this season.
Yeah. He was terrific.
No, I thought the cast additions with Bernthal as the Punisher and the woman who played Elektra were great. I thought that the particular casting and the embodiment of those characters worked for me. I know Elektra fans were wringing their hands and freaking out because they took a lot of there was a lot of leeway taken with her backstory and her origin. But honestly, her backstory and her origin in the comics is so comic-y that it wouldn't have worked in this world on TV. So like you got to accept some changes.
Right. Yeah. So the plot of this season, let's try to figure it out. So it's there's two tracks this season.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that really for this season, it felt more like a year of comics to me in terms of how the episodes sort of covered all the three or four different storylines together. Like I felt like the season one, felt like it was one large plot, and I actually enjoyed the way they layered the different stories. I felt like they did it a lot more intelligently, more thoughtfully. I liked it. It kept me more involved as a viewer because things kept happening, and then it sort of propelled the season. I didn't feel like it dragged as much.
I super disagree, but Connor, walk through the plot,
and then we'll talk about what Mike just said. Yeah. So the Punisher side, the Punisher is shown. Frank Castle has shown up in New York to get revenge on the Mexican cartel, the
biker gang
mob, and then the biker gang, which was
the Irish mob.
The biker gang was the biker gang from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, really?
That is the only real major crossover we've seen. I think with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. going into something else. Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has had other people go into their show. But everything else so far has ignored Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s existence until now.
Good
catch. It was like the dogs, something.
It was like dogs, hell, skulls, villains, devils.
Dogs of hell. We had all the words proper. Dogs of hell. That was anyway. So the Punisher's killing all them. And so Daredevil's investigating that. And meanwhile, Nelson and Murdoch law firm is trying to stay in business. Meanwhile, Daredevil's ex-girlfriend Elektra shows up, and she's now sort of a not superhero, but she's trained and she fights and she kills, and so the Daredevil is dealing with the Punisher, his law firm, and Elektra all at the same time throughout the course of the season, and those stories interact and they
a little bit of romance with Paige as well,
and he finally goes on a date with Karen Page. Those kind of the main touch points for this season, and they all intersect eventually, but that seemed to be sort of, and then of course the big reveal that the Hand is the big bad guy for this season, and Stick is not what he seems, and Stick trained Elektra from a little kid, and there's a whole mythology with Stick, and you really do get the feeling when you put that together with season one, that's the story leading into Defenders, because there's this mystical war that's happening in the background, and that ties into Iron Fist's story pretty nicely, and you figure it probably will tie into the Defenders, but who knows?
And I have to guess also whatever's go, because now this is I think there was a mention in Daredevil season one. I could be wrong, but it was definitely a mention in Jessica Jones, and now a mention here in Daredevil season two. But Roxxon as evil kind of corporation or whatever. So you've got kind of a mystical kind of whatever that is on one hand, but then on the other hand you have a technological kind of threat, which is that's the Marvel stew, like it's you know corporation technology and mystic arts, and then the convergence of them in New York City.
Right.
So as a siren goes off in my
sirens background. On.
Are you recording from Hell's Kitchen?
Yeah, apparently I am. So kind of that was a great kind of rundown. And Mike, going back to what you said, was like, and I think we're going to talk a lot about the release format of Netflix and how they handle those things. But I thought that just overall, to start this off, I want to say that I like this season. I really like this season. I really enjoyed it. I think that it was kept the tone and the momentum and the feeling of season one and built on it. But that said, I feel as if the way the plot lines, they did a lot over the 13 episodes. And my same complaint about Jessica Jones and my complaint about Daredevil season one, I still carry with this, is that I thought 13 episodes was too much. And it hit a real low point in the middle where I felt like they were just kind of treading water, and it got a point of repetitiveness that drove me nuts up until the Punisher goes to prison, and then that pulled me back in and I got back into it. And if you remember, Connor, do you remember you were watching, it took you a long time to watch, and you said you were stalled around episode 8, and I said, oh no, it gets good. And was I right?
Yeah,
8 is when Fisk comes at the very end, and then it could have picked up steam again. That's right.
Yeah, when Wilson Fisk shows up, there's a shot of adrenaline with the series that he's sorely missed. He's a great character. Yeah. He's a great I'm dumb today.
Yes,
you're still recovering.
Yeah, I'm still recovering from various illnesses. Vincent D'Onofrio is wonderful as Wilson Fisk, and when he shows up again.
The whole prison sequence, when they send the Punisher to prison, and it's the same prison where Fisk is at, number one, I did not, like, I avoided any spoilers, I avoided anyone talking about it. I pushed Fisk out of my head. I didn't think
totally
it at all. And so it was a true, unique surprise, and I, like, giggled. I was like, oh my God, this is awesome, and it was great. I thought it was fantastic. But the arc of introducing the Punisher, and then those first four or five episodes being so Punisher-centric, the show, I joked at one point, I'm like, the show should have been called The Punisher and a little bit of Daredevil.
Well, right. Daredevil suffers here from a malady that often superheroes suffer from, and that the people around them are more interesting. This happens to Batman a lot in his movies, in that I really found The Punisher to be captivating, and the same thing when Elektra shows up later on, whereas Daredevil is sort of the guidepost in the middle that everyone else swirls around. So
he becomes the most boring person because he's sort of a pinball between all of these sort of very dynamic characters. And I see what you're saying especially with the very beginning, it just became the Punisher show. And then you kind of forgot about it. And then he kind of sort of fades into the distance worried, oh, maybe he won't come back. So
his story faded into the distance, and then Elektra and the hand conflict came up.
Right.
And then that carried us through to the rest of the show, except we just want to tack on this little bit about the Punisher that just felt like it was a tack on. And his involvement in the last episode, other than finally donning the skull, was pointless. Like his involvement in the fight was pointless. And so I don't know. I mean, I just feel like – I still feel like they're figuring out their pacing and their steps. I think that the pieces were there. And if maybe they did 10 episodes or juggled it or made it a little tighter or compacted them. But it just felt like there was too much going on.
For Jessica Jones, the stalling was like they were trying to squeeze too much out of the single story. And that's where the stall had happened for me. Here, what I meant by my comment was like there were enough different stories going on that when we switched characters' points of view, at least I was interested. At least there was some action going on there. Yes, sometimes I got kind of tired of Karen Page constantly digging through old newspapers, but at least it kept things a little bit more vibrant. We got one of the nicer things.
The Karen Page annoyance factor on this in this season was
pretty
way high. pretty high. And I really like Foggy, and he was dancing on that line as well too at some points, where it was just and maybe it's because I was watching episodes back to back, but it just like felt as if it was just the repetitive scenario over and over again, which was just like, all right, whatever.
That's the tough thing, but we'll talk about that. But that's like one of those things. I actually couldn't watch more than two or three at once just because it got so heavy, right? Yeah. I mean, there was some. I thought tonally this was a really interesting, just to, in terms of how the fight sequences were, like they really ratcheted up the intensity of the fights. I remember being thrilled by the first season of Daredevil, where I really saw fisticuffs happen, right? There's the incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because everyone always goes back to the first season, the hallway fight, and which I think was great. But then in this season, we get Daredevil going down the staircase of with the bikers in that one episode, and then also you get a hallway fight with the Punisher in prison, and they were good and they were brutal, but it was just kind of like it just felt like, okay, they're trying to relive the season one.
It was transparent, trying to top themselves, but I did think that the Punisher prison fight was just magnificent in its brutality. It was, you couldn't turn away from it. It was crazy, but I do think that choreography-wise, these are still the best action sequences on television. And I think that this is the closest that anything's ever gotten in live action to capturing superhero fights.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they do a really good job of it, of these fantastic elements that happen. The stuff that you get on the page that you don't really get in the movies because the directors won't give them room to breathe. I think here, whoever's in charge of choreographing and shooting these fights is... should be commended. But I do want to go back really quickly to one thing you guys said a minute ago. I do agree that this season was more meandering. The first season was more tightly plotted because it was really only one story going on. So this one, you had more threads, so more opportunity to lose its way a bit. I did get really bored whenever they were doing the law firm stuff. I didn't really care about the law firm stuff. But that allowed for more interesting elements. I loved that we got to spend time with the Punisher. I loved that we got to spend time with Elektra. I loved that we spent time with Daredevil. Spend time with Wilson Fisk. There was more things going on. And as Mike said, the variety of it, is the variety pack element of it was fun. I will disagree. Yeah. I thought the Punisher showing up at the end to shoot the guy to help Daredevil was very much in line with his comic book appearances, where he'll just sort of show up with a sniper rifle and help somebody out and then nod and leave, which is kind of what he did here. And that's sort of their MO is to introduce these characters, but they don't really show up fully as themselves until the very last minute. Like that happened last season with Daredevil.
With Luke Cage.
But which we'll see probably even more in his series. But Daredevil wasn't really Daredevil until the very last episode in season one. And here, the Punisher doesn't don the skull until the last minute, and Elektra doesn't wear her costume until the last minute either. So that seems to be what their thing is, which is kind of dangerous, but...
That makes sense. I guess I see that point. That makes sense. We will get more. There's a little tease. And the thing is, like, honestly, like, I thought they would – the approach they took in season one with the reveal of the Kingpin, where we didn't even see Vincent D'Onofrio until episode 5,
right?
Yeah. I was surprised to see them go in the opposite direction, where we get the Punisher straight out of the gate.
I was 100%.
Yeah, which –
I thought it was thrilling just because it started it off right out the gate as a different kind of show.
He's so compelling as the Punisher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why sit on it?
Yeah.
How many versions of the Punisher have people tried to make since we were in high school?
So many.
Going back to Dolph Lundgren. They finally got the Punisher correct.
In terms of pacing across the season is one thing, but one thing that I really appreciated was the internal pacing of each show. I felt this time more so than before. Not having to deal with commercial breaks and that kind of thing let so many scenes breathe and be very affecting in sort of an unexpected way. Like there was a monologue that Castle does on the gravesite talking about the song that his daughter would sing that I thought was enormously affecting. Like, and you Supergirl has a lot of monologues, and it's been very frustrating for me because I think they're really poorly written because they feel rushed, and when you have a monologue that's rushed, it feels preachy. But you know, there were a good amount of monologues in this season, but I don't know if it's the editing or I think it's mostly obviously the casting, but they were able to do some things that really I thought really shined a spotlight on just what you can do with an hour-long episode that nobody else is doing on screen, I guess. And I was really impressed with some of the patience that the directors had with these actors to let them really just settle in. I really felt like each episode was something you could really chew on, and I think it's just not having those breaks. I felt like the direction in these episodes is, not to say it was better, but I found myself appreciating it more than I had expected.
Yeah, that's fair.
I love that one monologue, though. Made me cry.
Speaking of monologues and things like that, and going back to Connor, to what you were saying, was that this season did accomplish something for me where I found myself, as I started watching the season, having two specific things that I was like, oh, man, I wish they'd show this. Mm-hmm. And then within the length of the series, they did. And what the first one was, you know, like the whole first season, they're a law firm, all stuff like that. Never in a courtroom. So with the whole Punisher situation and the Punisher getting caught and arrested gave us an opportunity to see them in the courtroom and see, you know, and get a Matt Murdock monologue. Yeah. You know, questioning.
But we didn't get it.
Well, no. Well, yeah, I know. But we got Foggy, and no, we did get Matt questioning. We did get the one scene, you know, where he was pushing the witness. And all that stuff.
Right.
But again, I found myself like it wasn't enough. Like it was enough of a taste that it was like, And the other thing was about halfway through. So we finally get Daredevil in his costume, which, isn't perfect, but whatever.
I got used to it by the end of it.
Yeah, but I got used to it. But halfway through, I was like, you know what's missing? I'm like, where's the goddamn Billy Club? I want to see him swinging around. And sure enough, last episode, we get it. And they delivered on that, nailed it. Like, I got.
Yeah, nailed it.
And what's his face? When Gladiator, what's his real name?
Melvin Potter.
Yeah, Melvin Potter, right? When he hands him the. When he hands him the Billy Club and shows that, and I was like, oh, cool. And then that scene shows him actually swinging around a building with it. I was like, that's Daredevil. You know, like that was. Yeah, so.
Picture perfect.
So, I will give them credit that they were able to deliver on that.
I love that you brought up the lawyer stuff, because that was every time Matt would fail to show up at court, I got so frustrated.
Yeah.
I felt like I was with Foggy, because it's like that's one of the great things that Matt in the comics is able to balance that out, and he is able to have some of these great courtroom scenes. I really wanted him to validate all this stuff in front of Foggy and Karen. There was this, like, I had this weird emotional thing. I was like, just show up, dude. Don't screw these guys over.
That's the thing, is I think they went to the well with that too many times.
Yeah,
I agree. I agree with that.
I think they went to the well with the Matt disappoints Foggy in this
season,
which I understand is a tenet of Daredevil. Like, I understand that. Like, that has happened so much and all that sort of thing. But, like, they never laid the basis of Matt kicking ass and showing why him not showing up was a bad thing.
He's kind of a dick.
He comes across a little bit of a dick in this. And the thing is, he's alienated Foggy and Karen so much that I would find it unrealistic for them to come back together. I think they might have gone too far in that direction, to be honest.
We'll find out what happens now. But maybe. I don't know. And then also talking about going too far, the romance between Matt and Karen was just ridiculous. I'm sorry. Matt's consistently showing up being beaten up, and Karen and Foggy tells Karen he's an alcoholic, and then she dates him and never mentions it. Like, never? Like, that is.
Or shows up at his house, there's a strange woman in his bed, there's an old blind man sitting on his couch.
Right, and just like, get angry and walks out. Like that was a little, the romance angle with them was a little far fetched.
She seemed a little bit like Jack Bauer's daughter in 24. It's just whenever I saw her, she just was kind of like bumbling around. You know, it's just, I do agree. I was a little bit more annoyed with her in this season by far.
And also, it's like, oh, well, you know, the law firm thing isn't working out, but now I'm a reporter. Like, that was a bit of a leap. Like, and that said, though, I do like the bearded journalist guy.
The little editor.
Yeah, I was glad to see him back, because we don't have Ben Urich anymore, which breaks my heart.
I mean, that was a great moment in season one, but I think they made a huge mistake killing off Ben Urich, because they clearly wanted to have that angle of the story and filling it with her. While the newspaper industry is hurting and they'll take all the free labor they can handle, I could buy him letting her research and or go out and interview people. I don't buy him going, okay, now write the story for page one and give it to me at 2,000 words.
Absolutely not.
That would never happen.
Not only that, it's like, and I need it to be the cover of the Sunday edition. You know, like, what?
Yeah.
She's got that. I don't know that she's graduated college. Like, how did she get, like...
But I did think that you know, the actors that came from season one really did settle into their roles. I think Charlie Cox is, at this point, Daredevil. Like, I look at him now, and he's a great Matt Murdock, and he's a great Daredevil. I actually, you know, the helmet, the Daredevil helmet is a little weird from the brow up. I really like it from the brow down. So when it was in shadow and you couldn't really see how big his head was, it looked really good. I thought he's as Daredevil, I was really, he's just sort of, he owns the role now.
Yep. Agreed.
I still don't like Foggy's hair. I would have loved if he had cut his hair for season two. I would have loved that sort of nod to how ridiculous it looks. It doesn't even seem like it's of this time period to have this kind of hair. It's just
I don't disagree, but I think that guy is great. I think the guy playing Foggy was great. So.
Well, you know who's really good is the girl, the blonde girl that what's his friend's name, the other lawyer who comes in with what could have been a total throwaway part.
It's the other lawyer woman, yeah.
The other lawyer. I thought she was great. That could have been a nothing role, and every time she's on screen, she nails it. Like she does the most of those scenes. That was good.
Marcy. Yeah. Her name is Marcy. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Elektra, because for me, I thought that was really elegantly handled. I always thought, the Sienkiewicz book notwithstanding, I hadn't really thought of her as that totally psychotic in terms of her eagerness to kill people. But I loved every scene that she was in. I really enjoyed their that episode when it was a flashback and you got to see them meeting. I enjoyed that. Though a little bit the car racing and all that kind of stuff, I was like, what? But I thought she, for someone who was just coming into that character and had to define it instantly from the get-go, I thought she did a really good job.
Yeah, Elektra was really great. The thing that's fun about her is that at least this version of her, or other versions I've seen in comics, is that she's on the edge of being terrifying. So she's constantly trying to drag Matt over that edge. He doesn't want to go. And it's the push and pull between his feelings for her, the clear element of sex involved in everything they're doing together, and the excitement of it. And let's just come over the line a little bit. Just stick your toe over and see how it feels. Doesn't that feel really good? And then, you know, he's got to pull himself back over. I love their relationship in that sense. She did a really good job of making her psychosis seem attractive.
Yeah. And introducing her and giving us the little taste of the backstory and understanding what their previous relationship was like and meeting in college and all that sort of stuff. And then the reveal of how she was placed there and why she was doing it, I thought really had a payoff. That really had a strong payoff. And
it was brutal.
Yeah, it's totally brutal, but good.
For all its unfocusedness, I think what they brought to this world is really, really quality characters and really interesting stories that they had.
Yeah. There was a real sort of, they both communicated the pain of loving each other, right? Just like, she just couldn't help herself. And that's a really sort of subtle thing to have to bear. And even Matt, it's like he finally just said, screw it, I just want to be with you. Get me. You understand. He capitulates. He actually gives in to her, which I thought was really interesting. He doesn't have this intention of being the noble hero. Right.
But that was also super transparent, because you know what, like, as soon as he said that, I'm like, oh, she's not going to make it. You know, like, that's
Well, does Elektra ever really die? She's getting put into the giant iron suit at the end, so she's going to be resurrected, just like Nobu, the sushi restaurant. Do we want to talk about the non-story stuff, the distribution, or keep talking about the story stuff? What do you guys want to do?
Well, yeah, I think just to wrap up the story stuff is that I agree. I thought Charlie Cox is great. I think the cast is great. I think the Punisher was fantastic. I think the usage of Kingpin was great. I just felt as if 13 episodes was a little bit drawn out, and that the pacing of the stories got a little sporadic here and there. But all in all, I gave a thumbs up. I mean, it was by the end of it, it was satisfying, and I wanted more. So that's my indicator.
I know that the teams are different, and there's politics involved and everything. But how much would you just love to see Daredevil in a Spider-Man movie, or as part of the giant team of characters in the Infinity War movie? But like, it's such a rich world to play with here.
Yep,
it's very impressive what they've done, because there was you know would they keep those good vibes going from season one? And they did. I thought they did a really good job. Before we move on, I just want to say that one of the things I enjoyed the most was Scott Glenn in the fight scenes.
Because
he would fight in his close-up like the man of his age, and then they would pull back for the stuntman being, and he would just completely not him. And then they would cut back to close-up, and then back to far away. And it's like, they're holding the sword completely differently. They're moving. It was hilarious.
He's
great.
He's so good.
He's great at stick, though.
that whole thing when he was healing Elektra and having Matt make the tea with extra bourbon or whatever, and he just drinks the bourbon. There's the little pieces of humor here and there interjected with this sort of incredible violence. It was a nice, they were able to dance around that a bit. I love how these directors and these writers are really letting these actors make these characters really fully full dimensional, 360 degrees, however you want to say it. It's just like they seem real. They seem grounded. I don't feel like they're rushing through. And maybe that will add to the dragging a bit. But when you think about these characters, you really feel that you've experienced a story with them. You're not just watching the show. You are living this 12 hours, 13 hours. And I agree. I mean, maybe we'll make that segue now, but these are a lot to watch. And it's just having, you know, and if you want to, I think it's a real disservice after all this work to put them all at once and sort of have this expectation of the audience to sort of absorb it so quickly when they really are, they should be watched once a week, you know, and really savored because they're, the amount of work just in terms of finding all those ninjas. I mean, my God, there's a lot of cops, a lot of ninjas. The amount of the production values of this show are incredible. You know, just even the locations and dealing with all of that stuff. It's astounding to me, the budget for a show like this. It's just, it's incredible. And the commitment that Marvel and Netflix have made to telling these kind of sort of fringe stories, rapidly not fringe, but, you know, they're not popular culture superheroes, is really, I think, very encouraging and some of the best in terms of genre shows on the market in years.
Yeah.
Doing them weekly is tough because they're not structured like typical shows.
No.
There isn't a cliffhanger. There isn't if they're designed to be watched right out, you know, the little box comes up in the corner saying start the next one now, and you go okay, and that's how they're
but it hurts my feelings. It's so much punching.
People were, you know, asking us pretty regularly, when's that show coming out? And the thing is, it's, for me at least, it's hard to find extra 13 hours a week to watch, or 13 hours to watch these. You know, if I got a lot of stuff in my DVR. If I spend 13 hours watching this straight through, that's 13 hours piling up my DVR or doing things in my life outside of television, and it's tough.
So it came out a weekend in February, right?
Yeah. March 18th.
March. And it happened to be a weekend that I was actually down in L.A. and I was busy. So I didn't get to watch any of it that first weekend. And in fact, I don't think I even started watching it until like a week later. And so part of it was, you know, I personally dislike the Netflix model of dropping the series all at once. Right. And I say that even more now after watching the James Franco Kennedy show on Hulu, which did not drop it all at once, released it every one a week, every Monday. And I was current with that, and I had no problem because it was just one episode, and it unveiled naturally. Whereas when you do the Netflix dropping it, it's the combination of I got to avoid social media because everyone's talking about it, which is fine. I wanted to be excited, and I've learned now not to complain about that, and it's my choice not to watch it. And I didn't have anything spoiled for me. I didn't know about Wilson Fisk. Like, I had a good job of avoiding all of it. But then also, like, it's maybe it's because we have to do the podcast or whatever, but even less so, like, I just feel pressure and this like weight on my shoulder. We're like, oh God, there's like 12 episodes I have to watch now. Like, it's so it's funny because like I'm watching another Netflix series. I'm watching that series Love that also came out around the same time. And I'm watching one at a time, maybe once a week, maybe every four or five days. Like, I'm taking my time with it, and I'm finding myself enjoying it more. And so I really think spacing it out is the better approach. But, you know, the Netflixes, they see this as their differential.
If we were watching this once a week, we'd be at episode 6 right now. And there would still be a discussion. I feel like the discussion drops off quickly.
Yeah, no one's talking about it now. You're right. Yeah,
it comes out. People talk about it a lot the first week or two, and then most of the people who are going to talk about it have seen it because apparently they've got nothing to do. I don't. I envy all of you who can watch it so quickly. But if it was coming out once a week, we would be talking about the show every week, and it just seems like an odd distribution model.
I mean, honestly, much like we talk about The Flash every week.
Yeah.
Or when it's on. I mean, I know. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're screaming at a wall to a certain degree because I don't think Netflix is going
to
change.
No, they're not. It's just tough. I want to explain to people that we watched as fast as we possibly could. I didn't finish it until last weekend.
Yeah, same here.
Or last week when I was super sick and stayed up from work and watched 8 hours in a row.
Yeah.
Luckily, my sickness was a benefit because I don't know when I would have watched those 8 episodes.
But it becomes harder. I mean, it doesn't. But then it all becomes this crazy blur. Like, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and there are entire things like that whole scene with the Irish, the son, and where he offs his dad in front of everybody. That whole Irish gang thing. Like, that would have been fun to talk about over a couple of days. Like that whole side of the sort of the underworld of New York. I loved seeing that stuff, but I felt like, oh, I better write a note to myself so I can remember and when I'm going to do the podcast. It just, you don't know what to remember. You know, it just, yeah. And that was the thing. It's just like, there are some really cool concepts and they really filled out the world in such a fun way in this season. Like, I felt like last season was very specific, but here I got a much broader sense of what was happening in Daredevil's world. And the sad thing is, since I've watched it so quickly, now I don't know when I'm going to go back to that. I guess Luke Cage. Was anybody else hoping that Jones would show up in this?
No, not at all. I had no interest in Jessica showing up in this, but I could have gone for some Luke Cage. I could have gone for some.
Ron will always go for the Luke Cage. If you ask, should Luke Cage be this? Yes, that's the answer. Yeah. The answer is yes.
If there's any opportunity for Luke Cage, yes. In fact, my complaint about him not being in Jessica Jones enough is still valid. I thought he was. Yeah, he's a star, and I can't.
Ron's main concern with Batman versus Superman was not enough Luke Cage.
Not enough Luke Cage.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty much. It's really plaguing. I mean, you know, it's plaguing everything I watch now. It's a problem. I was watching a documentary about Kennedy, the Kennedy assassination. Yeah, I was like, where's Luke Cage? So.
Were you guys back? One quick thing. I got the fact that they were sucking blood, I guess, out of those kids, but I just felt like that whole sequence was kind of
opaque. Like, I didn't really.
Yeah.
So they were sitting, and then they became zombies, or not zombies, but they had mind control. And I felt like that whole little miss. Maybe it's just because they want to explain it more in Iron Fist or something. I felt that whole section kind of got muddy.
I let it go as sort of a very comic booky thing. Like, okay, I'll just. Yeah. I don't quite understand what's going on here, but clearly it's bad.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So Luke Cage is done. I think it's set for September release.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jessica Jones, they haven't started another season yet. They're shooting Iron Fist right now. There's been some set photos out there. And then, according to Charlie Cox, Daredevil, they're shooting Defenders later this year.
Wow. Oh, wait, I got one more plot question.
Yeah.
Remember last year they showed him using his radar capability?
No, they didn't. They only showed him one time, really, or two times. It was very.
Yeah, they only showed it once. But he didn't, because it's like, I felt like showed that sense. Didn't they show it once?
He was looking at Karen Page when she took her shirt off in his apartment. It was very, very early on. It was the first or second episode. And then
it was just really interesting because I loved the notion that he couldn't hear the ninjas. Like, I thought that was...
Right. That was really that was really clever because that gave him a vulnerability that up to this point he didn't really have. Yeah.
I felt like they just kind of ignored that he had that capability, or maybe does he not have that capability?
No, they don't show it.
I think what he has is heightened senses, and he's able to use his hearing is heightened to allow him to give him a certain amount of sonar, right? But if he can't, if the ninjas were masking their breathing and their heartbeats in a way that he can't hear them, he's blind. He doesn't know they're there.
But the show doesn't dwell on the powers. That's one of the things they did. It's sort of like you figure it out how he's doing this. They don't really go into it like the movies.
Yep.
I mean, and that was one of the benefits of the first season was that they didn't dwell on it. It's just like, just figure it out. He's blind. He can do all the stuff. Somehow he's doing it.
Yeah. I love that ninja stuff though. That was great.
A lot of ninjas.
Send them in
the ninjas,
which is cool because that's such a Frank Miller, like the mass amount of ninjas crawling down the building. I thought that totally fit. You know, I thought
when the guy pulled out the size, I was like, they're so good at giving you what you want over time. Like that, just the little icons here and there. Even though I agree, as soon as I saw the sigh, I kept waiting for her to get stabbed with it. Like, I was like, it's coming.
So here's a question, though. Do you think that the whole moral superiority resignation by Rosario Dawson was to give her something to do? Or, did we really need that much time spent with her arguing with the hospital administration? You know, like...
There was a lot about hospital administration, more than I expected.
There was a lot of administration in the season, to be honest.
They had to get her out of Hell's Kitchen and get her up to Harlem or wherever...
Okay. I mean, yeah. Will she have to apply for COBRA to get her benefits now, or does that not? Maybe we'll see her at the unemployment office or something. That kind of detail is kind of silly, thinking about all the other stuff that they had to shoot, and then that scene gets kept. Yeah. But maybe she just needed a little bit more drama.
Yeah, I think they need to give the real actress something to work with.
I lived in New York for 30 some odd years, and if it had gotten to the point where there was like armies of ninjas crawling on buildings, I probably would have moved quicker. You know what? I can put up with a lot. Ninja armies, I gotta go.
What I like is that last battle, last fight takes place on the rooftop that is surrounded by police, and yet they just like. Well, let's see how this plays out.
Would you?
Yeah, you guys, just hold on for a second.
Oh, reminding me of that, I did like what happened with the cop when they finally caught the Punisher and that one cop who they talk to. They get tips to he catches both Daredevil and the Punisher, and Daredevil goes, you know, take the collar, you know, let me go, but take the collar, you know, like that whole. I thought that scene was great. And then that guy got promoted and became a piece of it. Like I like, you know, their link inside, you know, Daredevil's link inside the police is a good tool to use. So I thought that was good. It was good. Yeah, a little Commissioner Gordon. Yeah, good stuff. I liked it. I dug it. I'm excited for Iron Fist. I'm excited for Luke Cage. I'm excited for Defenders. Everyone that I've spoken to on the Marvel side, and Connor, you probably have heard the same, is like delighted, surprised at how well they're doing. Like they weren't gonna do a season two of Jessica Jones. I don't even know if they were gonna do a season two of Daredevil.
Yeah.
So it's good to see we're getting good TV shows to watch. So I'll take it.
Yeah. And we should enjoy it while it happens. This is not like your normal show. This isn't going to go on for 8 seasons.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, I'd say 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Well, they have to kill Karen now that she knows, right? I mean,
well, I really want her to become the heroin addicted hooker junkie. Like, can we get that storyline, please?
Yeah. Oof, it's a little dark.
It does go dark. Yeah. So I was really glad that we didn't get, even though Elektra did die and was stabbed, wasn't the
iconic stab. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad it wasn't that.
The normal everyday stabbing to the heart.
Yeah, exactly. It had a lot of like meaning, and it had a lot of like I felt, you know, you felt the weight of it. It was well done.
One thing I did think while watching this, and as we talk about possible other seasons, is that it seems very conspicuous that there has been no even hint of a Bullseye.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. I kept thinking about that, was especially toward the latter part of the season. It's like, I wonder how they would handle him.
Because, you know, they need to. That image of Colin Farrell with the Bullseye.
Must be eradicated.
Must be destroyed. Yeah. And, we had Wilson Fisk. We had the Owl. We had the Punisher. We had the Hand. Elektra. It's the only piece left that's missing.
Yeah. Yep.
I'd like to see it. If they wrap up this whole Hand storyline with the Defenders, as I suspect, that would leave season 3 wide open to, I would say,
Bullseye.
End the trilogy with Bullseye. That's what I would do if I was in charge.
It's great. Is it Fisk gets out of prison and then uses Bullseye to get revenge? Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
More Vincent D'Onofrio.
He was so good.
So good.
I love his arm flailing fight style.
Yeah,
he's just wham.
He's just this giant bear.
Oh, and that scene when Daredevil went in as Matt Murdock to talk to him, and like the smash in the face on the table, like it was just like I was like, whoa. Like, it was just like that was and it also showed, you know, how much of the prison that he now ruled, you know, because nobody, I was like, isn't someone going to say something when he leaves? Oh, no, they all work for him. Like, it's just that's amazing. So I like that they showed what happened to Fisk when he got into prison and his ascent to power there.
How quickly he took over. It was great.
Yeah. Really good. Really good.
I really enjoyed it. It was not as tight as season 1, but I really had a great time watching it.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah. The more we talk about it, the more I get excited about it. And kind of like I said, my nitpicks were just, you know, about the length of it, and just in the middle felt like a slog, and I just felt like there was a bit too much. But, you know, you give me great Punisher, you give me great Kingpin, you give me, you know, great Hand and Elektra, you give me that Billy Club, I was happy. I thought the scene in the beginning with Daredevil chained to the chimney with the Punisher was really good and gave us a lot of characterization and the difference between.
That was a great scene.
I love how he kept calling him Red too. Just the little things like that. He was so good as Punisher. It was so crazy.
It made you wonder why they couldn't get this character right before. He's not that complicated, but when he's done well, he's really affecting. Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so if you have any thoughts on Daredevil Season 2, you can go to iFanboy.com. There'll be a post on for this show where you can talk about it. Tell us what your thoughts were, the highs and lows, and what you're looking forward to in the future. That's all available at iFanboy.com, as well as our other podcast, the Pick a Week podcast, where Ron, Josh, and I talk about the week's comics and other special edition shows. You can hear us discuss Batman v Superman from a couple months ago. Would you call that a discussion?
I know, Ron, we
never mention it again, but we had to talk about it one more time.
I lost my cool. I'm sorry.
You can hear us discuss the latest DC animated film, Justice League vs. Teen Titans. You can also, in a couple weeks, hear us discussing Captain America Civil War. That'll be a big one coming up soon. So all those shows are available at iFanboy.com. Now available on Google Play.
I've seen Captain America already.
Yeah. You're the second person Mike and I know have seen it already and who makes the same noise. I've seen it. Ah, ha, ha, ha. So good. Blah, blah, blah. Jerks.
Listen, I was just surprised when the Guardians of the Galaxy landed. I was like, I did not see that coming. I did not see it coming.
Cool.
What about when Luke Cage was there?
Well, I did get to spend some quality time with Mr. Coulter on the red carpet.
I will allow you one thing to say about the film. Could it have used more Luke Cage?
Yes, it could have.
Okay.
Not a surprise.
So until the next show, which again will be Captain America Civil War, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Mike.
I'm not afraid of life, I'm afraid of death. Build my love in the things I say. You gotta lift your face to the breaking day. And I'm just trying to do my best. I'm not afraid of life, I'm afraid of death. Build my love in the things I say. You gotta lift your face to the breaking day. And so I ran. And I jumped and I threw.
So much punching.
So much. Ouch. 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 Table. Table.
I can't believe they didn't all have stuffy noses all the time because of all the broken noses part. Yeah. They all talk like this. But I like that you brought that up, Ron, because it's like he's so beat up all the time.
Like, it's not only that, but it's the Foggy telling her he's an alcoholic and her just like... All right, so he seems like a good guy to date. Like, it's just like, what? Like,
he's an alcoholic and he shows up bloody every day.
Yeah, I know.
She must have a rough background.